Some water?
Go back and get it.
All right. So, let me see if we have control here. You got me in? Boom. All right. That's Super Liver, by the way. The guy at work put that on my computer, and I saved it. It's pretty awesome. So, now, can you get the pun? It's a dad joke. It's really bad. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Woo! Thank you. So what happens when you do these things at 2 o'clock in the morning? Just saying. Now, on May 16th, 2018, God let me do something that was one of the most awesome things that has happened in my life. And He taught me a lot. And sometimes you find the most awesome blessings in the craziest places. And so that's why we decided we wanted to do this and share the story with you. Again, not for our story and not for liver transplant or donation, although they're all good things. But you just, it would be so awesome. Many of you walk through it with us from a distance. And it would just be so awesome for you to see all the things that God did. And I didn't do it so we have a new congregant. If I did, I wouldn't get too many more before I wouldn't be here. Can't give an organ every time you try to get. And I told him not to come. That, you know, we didn't do it for that reason. He's in this church because he sees that you guys are just precious. And this is where he felt like God called him, he and his wife. And his wife probably plays just as big a part of this as anybody because she's been an amazing woman through all of this for Mark and for all of us. So we're going to tell you the story. And the story doesn't take all that long, but what we want to do is bring out all the things, all the places God gave us winks, all the places God's hand moved. And I hope that you enjoy hearing how God worked. And what I would like to do first is allow you to, he wants to give, these are some crazy abbreviations, and you're going to be hearing them throughout. So Mark is the only one that knows what they mean. I'm not even going to try to pronounce him. So Mark, give some of your abbreviations they're going to hear.
The first one would be NASH. This is frequently used by the doctors, nurses, and they know what it means. It's non-alcoholic, which means it wasn't induced by
whatever.
Alcohol.
Whatever.
Just communion.
Sorry.
Steatohepatitis. It means that you've got cirrhosis of the liver by genetic or other means rather than alcohol. And most people, when you got cirrhosis, automatically think you're an alcoholic. Right. The second would be a MELD score. This is a score that's assigned to you by a doctor, and it uses three different factors to determine it, which I won't go into because I could be here 2 or 3 hours just talking about that part. But it's a score that puts you in as far as the level that you are at, and whether or not you're at the top of the list or bottom list of waiting on the liver transplant. And it goes from 6 to 40. 6 being the better end. You don't want to be at the upper end, which is 40. Most transplants occur at about 36 unless you have a living donor. They can start doing living donors at 15 to 18. And mine was about 18 when Doug did this. So I was still at the lower end of what would take for me to get a cadaver. They usually, as I said, they go at 36 because there's so many people. Right now, there's over 16,000 people waiting on a liver. So they have to do this in order to get the worst patients first. And when you get around 36, it's kind of iffy whether you'll get a liver or not because your health depends on it. The doctor told me at this time that if I waited till I could get a liver through a cadaver, that I most likely wouldn't make it through the surgery. And then next is, when you guys got involved, and more or less, with PRESS, it is posterior, reversible encephalopathy syndrome.
Key word there is posterior.
You were there.
Sorry.
But it's where water or a chemical goes to the back of the brain and causes pressure on the brain, and it will cause seizures, blindness or affect your whole body.
All of which we saw. Yeah.
It can actually kill a person. And the fourth one is hepatic encephalopathy. It's closely related to the first one, but it only happens to people with liver disease, hence the hepatic. And it causes things like mood changes. You get really grumpy, didn't I, Brenda? And it can cause your memory to go away. And several different things. And there's some people go into a coma. And if you get to the coma stage, there's little chance that you'll come back out of the coma. Well, my story started back in about, well, before 1997, 1998. After Brenda and I got married, she wanted to make sure that she got her worth if something happened, so she took about $100,000 worth of insurance out on me. Wow. When she did that, they came and drew blood. And when they did that, they called me back and said, you need to go see a doctor because your triglycerides are 793. Yeah, I was at the top. And they said, you need that, and your cholesterol level as well above 400, about 453, 470, someplace around there. So I just fat walking around, fat and sugar.
Wow.
And it's a dangerous thing. So we went to the doctor, and they just put me on some medication. Doctors love doing that. And they kept an eye on me. In 1999, I started having some chest pain. And around March of 1999, they went in and put a stent in my heart because there was a blockage, and then there was another artery less than 50% blocked. And 3 months after that, we started to have some more chest pain. And it's 3 months to the day of when they put the stent in. And so they went in and put me into another heart cath, and they did that. And when the doctor looked in there, he said, we need to take you to surgery, and now. If we don't, it'll be less than a few days that you'll make it, maybe a few hours, because the three major arteries going into the heart went from 50-some percent blocked up to 98% blocked. Hmm. And this was God talking to me in a way that I wasn't accustomed to. He was trying to get my attention. You know, God will take you to the limit to get your attention. And this was shortly before I realized I was being called to minister to others and preach. And so he knew how to get my attention really fast.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the triple bypass, and it was a miracle. 4 days I spent in the hospital, and 10 weeks I was back to working. And I was lifting 50 to 100-pound boxes of paper at that time because I was manager of a back-of-the-house printing shop. So God got my attention. And during this time, I'd go out and mow grass, and I'd be preaching to the lawnmower. It heard a lot of different sermons, believe me. You never did anything like that, did you?
No. Usually the cats.
And still my triglycerides were high, and so they kept on pumping these medicines into my system. And 2003, they wanted to just check on my liver. And they went in and pulled a piece out. It's fun if you never had one. So get in line for me.
Wish they just pulled a piece out of mine. No. Sorry, go ahead.
Only 60%. What are you complaining about? You can live with 40%.
That's right, for a little while.
But that's when they first discovered I had NASH. And as I said, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis. And the doctors kept me on the medicine, treating the symptoms of the liver disease rather than the cause. If I had feel fatigued, they'd put me on vitamins or whatever and try to get me back up feeling good. If I had memory issues, they just kept on trying to pump drugs into me and get me feeling better. And in early 2016, I went to a doctor in this area, which due to civil and legal responsibilities, I can't mention names or hospital names, because if they think I'm saying anything derogatory or anything that would make them look bad, then they could take everything we got in the church. So we'll just leave it at initials. So Dr. M came into the room, and within 5 minutes, he had me diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver. I say it was God that did it. He gave him the knowledge to bring that diagnosis within 5 minutes. This guy didn't even know me, and yet he was able to look at me and see what's wrong. And by the way, there's going to be parts that I get emotional on. You may see me stop and not say anything because I get very emotional, because I get emotional when God talks to me. I get emotional when God brings these things to me. So if you see me crying or whatever, it's God working. And, you know, when I was back in my teens, I said, God, wherever you want me to go, whatever you want me to do, I'll go there. You never say that to God. Because He will bring it back to your plate. So heart surgery, liver disease, I asked for it. And, you know, I'm really proud that God chose to use me. You know, that's a special calling that God can use you in this way. Because I got to witness to so many people. You know, nurses would come up in the Sea City up north and come in my room and say, hey, we heard you got a great story. Can we listen to it? These are nurses I've never seen before. The nurses are passing around. And I'm not talking about one or two. I'm talking dozens of nurses would come into my room. And I was able to witness to them what God did for me, how God used me. And, you know, it's just wonderful. And Dr. M diagnosed me just within a month. The gastroenterologist, Dr. A, came in and he looked at it and said, yep, that's what you got. And my wife and I, we sat and asked, so if this is what he's got, when will you be sending him to a transplant hospital? This doctor said, well, we're going to wait till 90% of his liver is gone before we consider that. And so we said, okay. And I thought that was really kind of strange. So I did research, and I finally decided to go to a bigger hospital. So I went to a hospital in the middle of Kentucky. And that hospital, the first thing the doctor said after we told him, that, because he asked us why we were there and why a doctor didn't recommend us, I recommended myself and called, made the call. And we told him about the 90% gone. He said, why would we want to bring a cadaver up here? You'd be dead by the time your liver is 90% gone. And so I thought about that, and they accepted me. They did some tests, and they looked through my body. I mean, you've never seen so many tests until you see this. It's 4 days of nothing but tests. And they check you from head to toe. They even did a psych evaluation on me. I don't know how I passed it, but I did. And when they did all these tests, they came back and said, you look really healthy on the outside. We'd never know that you're sick.
And Brenda said, oh, no, spend time with him.
That's right. I'm surprised I lived that long. But we wouldn't know that you're sick. But we looked at the paperwork. We looked at all the tests that you've taken. You're really a sick man. That's when Brenda amen.
She's going to grab a banner and start running around at this point.
And they put my MELD score at first at 12, which, as I told you, 6 to 40 is the range. So they said, you're not really that bad yet, and we're just going to wait and see what happens. Because this city in the middle of Kentucky, they only use cadavers. They don't use living donors. So Doug wasn't even a question at that time.
Right.
And so I had to get up to 36. And they looked at me and said, well, it's going to take a while to get there.
And with his heart problems, if he waited as long as the average person waits, the problems he was having with his liver would greatly affect his heart, and he probably wouldn't make it to get a cadaver. If his MELD score got high enough to get a cadaver, he would already be too sick because of his heart to probably live through the surgery. So,
with heart, lung, and all these things, they consider me a high risk. And, you know, doctors just don't want a high risk because there's liability. And so they said, okay, we'll keep an eye on you. Every 3 months at first, you'll need to come down and you'll need to have blood work done. And we'll check up on you. And we went down there. And somehow, I've come across on the internet, somebody told me about the city up north that has a living donor. And a living donor is someone who's willing to give you one of their, or part of their organ to be able to allow you to live. And the one great thing about this is the liver is the only organ in the human body that will reproduce itself. It, once it's had a piece removed, it can grow back to 100%. So I decided to go up to that city, and we went through the same thing.
By the way, I tried rubbing raw liver on my hair, and it doesn't work, just to let you know.
That's peaceful. So we went up there, we talked to them, they explained. They said, we've got a doctor over here that is doing a procedure that most hospitals won't. And he's the one that perfected the living donor program. You know, God had to be there to get the doctor that perfected the situation and be able to do it. You know, he's an awesome man. But it took God's skill, God's love, to bring this man up to the point where he could do this. Right. And he's doing them. They're flying him to Saudi Arabia. They're flying him all over the world to do these transplants, which I couldn't believe that that God supplied me with the number one man at the number two hospital in the world. God really blessed me. He explained the program, what would happen, that they'd take out my liver and be able to replace it with part of another person's liver. And my liver, or the liver that I would get, would grow back to 100% within 8 weeks and 9 months. And right now we're at the 9 months part, and I should have a whole liver right now. And his liver should be back to a whole liver by now. The only difference between ours and yours is we only have one lobe, and you guys have two lobes. But they work just the same. God has blessed us so much to allow this to happen. People don't realize how much God's taught these people. And so look back.
Carry on.
Think about it. I was getting to the point where I'd put it on Facebook. I had talked to everybody. My brothers, my sisters, my in-laws, and everybody called the Sea City, And they said, I'm sorry. But nobody matches. First of all, they had to be under 55 years old. And all my brothers and sisters are a little bit over 55. And everybody that wanted to be tested, they either had something, an illness that they couldn't be tested, or they were too old. And we was running into that program, or that problem.
Or they were waiting on his money.
That's illegal. You're not supposed to say that out loud. I won't tell them how much you charge me. And so I just said, Lord, now this is back in January, February time period in 2018. I said, Lord, this year I want nothing for my birthday except a new liver. And my birthday is the first part of the year. And at this point, Doug will take over and tell you their part, and I'll come back and tell you some more.
First I'm going to have someone help tell the first part of this, because they got me into this mess. Almost 1 year ago, for the Super Bowl, two teams I can't stand. Should have let me know right then it was going to be a rough night. We were at the Super Bowl party for the church, and during this party, someone came over to me and said they wanted to talk a little bit while we're at the Super Bowl about something God had put on their heart, and they just wanted to know what I thought about it. So we had a really good, unusual conversation at the Super Bowl, and I'm going to stop right there and let the person who approached me, well, actually, it wasn't the person that approached me. It was this person's husband. They came to me and said, my wife would really like to talk to you about something unusual. You think you could just spend a few minutes with her while the Super Bowl is going on? I said, sure. So little did we know that little conversation would change everything. But come on up, Carrie. Which one, Red? Okay. Can we get a big hand for Carrie? Woo! I can do this.
Hello.
I heard that.
I really like public speaking, so I just want you to know that. Forgive me now. But when you're involved with a story like this that is so plainly God, it's really hard to deny the chance to get to talk about it.
Yep.
I only knew of Mark's name. I'd never met him. I took care of his great-nephew when he had leukemia and eventually passed away. But his family went to church with some of Jay's family. And so it was just through Facebook that I even happened to see where they'd shared a post. And I kind of toyed around. I've always been passionate about organ donation. I did a lot of stuff on it in nursing school. And it just kept coming up. This post just kept coming up. This guy needs a liver. I was well, I don't know this guy. Why am I so drawn to this post? What's this all about? So I prayed about it, and I messaged some common friends that Mark and I have just to see, you know, what's the story, what's going on. And so that night, it just hit me. And I don't know if you've ever had something on your heart, but if you don't say it out loud, you're either going to throw up or you're going to pass out. And I told my husband, I said, this is really crazy, but what I'd like to do with our tax income is to supplement our income. I really feel like I'm supposed to give part of my liver to this guy. And my lovable husband, the wonderful, supportive man that he is, says,
let me buy more insurance.
He says, no. Okay.
Oh, that wasn't what he said.
No, he didn't say that. He said, oh, okay, like, but maybe we should talk to Doug about it. Maybe he can give you some guidance on it. So I talked to Doug, and I presented it to him. I said, I don't know this guy. I don't know why I feel this way other than it's God. And he said, so let me get this straight. You could potentially lose your job. You'd have no income. You wouldn't be able to pick up either of your children for possibly 8 weeks. And you still want to do this. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It sounds crazy as it is. And he said, look, he said, if this is what God was calling you to, I think it would be a clearer path. I really don't think this is what he's calling you to. And part of me inside was like, oh, thank goodness. I was like, well, that made me feel better.
But if I'd known what God was going to say next, I would have said, yeah, you go for it.
So
woo!
He said, I don't think that's really what he's trying to tell you, but, you know, pray about it and think about it and stuff.
So if you guys know Carrie, you know her heart. If she hears about a need anywhere, she is going to take it upon herself to do it. It's awesome. But she had a lot to lose. So
he goes across the room, and about 10 minutes later, he looks over at me, and he said, send me that number, that phone number, and the guy's name. And I said, okay. And he's just looking at me weird, and I'm like, all right. So I sent it to him, and he later told me he realized that every reason he gave me why I shouldn't, he didn't have that reason. And so just to get to be a part of the story, sometimes God's asking you a question, and the answer is, it needs to be yes, but it's not why you think it is. So it taught me not to be afraid when God's asking me that. I don't always see the bigger picture. I only see part of it. And if I hadn't have said yes, and if I hadn't have splurted it out that night, even though I was going to have to tell somebody, it's just, he's just looking for to use you as part of the plan. You're not the whole plan.
Right.
But I called when Doug finally called me and told me that he was approved. And he asked me if I wanted to call Mark. And I thought, wow, like, I get to call somebody and tell them that they're getting a life-saving donation, and he has no clue who I am. And so I wrote it down. I called Jay's uncle to get his phone number because I had no – Doug thought I knew Mark. He kept asking me all these questions about Mark. I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know this guy. Like, and I wrote it down, and I called Mark, and he was like – he said, well, let me ask you. He said, you know, how old's your pastor? He thought we were just in the beginning stages. He had no idea. And I said, no, you don't get it. It's been approved. This is happening. And he cried, and I cried, and everybody cried. And then after I hung up, I thought, what have I done? Did I imagine that? Like, maybe I shouldn't have called him. So after
you sent me a text that just said, I think I'm in a dream right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, like, it was like I couldn't even feel my own body. I was out of my body just thinking about what was going to happen. But just to get to play a part and just a reminder to not be afraid to say yes when God says something to you. And I've got the little, it was like a business card, the back of a business card. I scribbled his phone number down real fast, and I've got that on my fridge just as a reminder to not put God in a box and just see what he'll do.
Awesome.
And if you ever want to see Doug really funny, see him on pain medicine.
You know, at this point, I was thinking, who is this woman? I really couldn't believe it. Who would offer me their life? Who would give their life, potentially, up that I may live? Kind of reminds you of somebody else, doesn't it? You know, Jesus did that for all of us.
But the difference is, Jesus didn't look like that.
That's a good picture of you.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I'll tell you, when she talked to me that night, I am a big chicken. Okay, just be honest. This is how you know it's God, okay? When she was talking to me, I didn't, you know how you always say, oh, you sound holy. I got to go pray about this. Before she finished the conversation, the reason I said, hey, give me that phone number, is because God had already just nailed me. And I had no worry or it was just, it had to be God. And I kept thinking, well, she has kids. My kids are grown. She's young. I'm old and expendable. I have O negative blood I can give to anybody. I probably won't lose my job. So all these things. And by the time I got home, totally at peace, I was thinking exactly what you said. This is the craziest thing in the world. Why am I not upset about this? I literally got up the next day, talked to HR at Toyota, got all the approval that they could do it, and had called the other hospital that evening, and already had the ball turning within 24 hours of our conversation. It was didn't need prayer time. That's when you know, and I want you to understand this. Anytime you do anything, even if you think it was you, or if he calls you to do something crazy, here, just read the verse with me. Philippians 2:13, for it is God who works in you both, what's the both? To will and to do his good pleasure. So when it's that clear and God speaks to you and you're just shaking all over because you just know it's God, the only thing you have to do is say yes. You don't have to be courageous. You don't have to have it figured out. You don't have to have a 5-point plan for how you're going to get there. If you know that you know that you know it was God, God puts it in you to will and to do. So the first part of that is to will. So if he speaks, you be obedient. And guys, we're praying the last, what, 3 or 4 weeks we've talked about getting close to God, spending more time with God, praying with God. Okay, you start doing that, and guess what he's going to start doing if you're serious about it? He's going to start speaking. So I think that this was perfect timing for us to do all this, because once God begins to speak to you and you know that you've heard him, all you have to do is say yes. We didn't know how we were going to find it. We stood to lose about $20,000 in income. Of course, it's the physical risks, the whole thing, wondering how it would turn out. But not one question was asked. It was just, okay, let's do this. And that's unusual. But I'm telling you, when you hear God, he'll give you the courage and he'll make the way. And it's not faith if you already have it figured out, right? So you just say yes. And you let God go where he's going to take you. And the more time we've spent together learning to pray and learning to get close to God and fellowship and know him more, the more he's going to speak to you and the more opportunity you're going to have when you draw close to him to show the world his love. So you just got to say yes. So at this point, we couldn't tell Mark, because if I called Mark and said, hey, I want to give you part of my liver, and then I went to get tested and I failed, it would have just put him on a roller coaster, right? So I went on up there to get tested, and like he said, it's 3.5 days, and they put you through 25 hours of testing, and this is just one shot. Almost 80 vials of blood in one setting. This was at the beginning. And so I went in and sat down at a chair. This was pretty awesome. I went in and sat down at a chair, and it was the sweetest, about my age, little black lady came out and just precious to me. And so I'm sitting in the chair, and she reads my order, and she says, Mr. Doss, we're going to have to lay you down. I said, what? And so she carries me to another room. She lays me down. She starts pulling out these vials. And she keeps pulling, pulling, pulling. And I'm starting to realize why she wanted to lay me down. But the funny part was the whole time she's pulling the vials, this is all she said. True story. I'm so sorry, Mr. Doss. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry, Mr. Doss. And she just kept repeating that. I'm like, no, I was not scared before I came in. But so she draws, it was 70-some vials. We counted them. And then she went to the kid's toy chest, and she got me this little parachute guy out. She said, you just deserve a toy. I don't care how old you are. And so that's where it all started. And I went and had all my testing done, and I still couldn't tell him. They called me and said everything looked good. I was healthy, that I could give a part of my liver, but that Mark's liver was larger than my liver. And the sizes didn't match up. And she said very confidently, so it looks like you're not going to be able to give him your liver. You'll have to decide what you want to do from here, because you're a qualified donor, but your liver's not going to be for Mark.
Well, it's really a miracle here. He took his first test on March 10th, which happened to be my lovely wife and myself. It's our anniversary. And yeah. two days later, which I prayed for, Lord, all I want for my birthday is a new liver. So 2 days later on the
12th, I was wrapping your present.
Yes. Was the last day of his testing. So God provided my answer to my prayer. And people say, well, that's coincidence. but both dates, doing right. the same thing.
Right.
It
it's
God
winks. God winks. It's God letting you know in a way only you understand that He's there.
Of course, I didn't find out till later, but God was there supplying my birthday present.
Yeah. Well, they said the liver's too small, but they were going to send it to Germany for 3D imaging because they have to create an image of your liver to see where it's going to be cut and all this. And if I decided to give to someone else, they wanted to do the 3D imaging. And I was like, I'd be glad to donate since we've come this far, but I just know that I know that I know God's called me to Mark. And so I just started praying. I'm like, God, I know you did this. And for your glory, how could it be any different? So I'm just going to trust Him. About a week later, the imaging came back. And even though the hospital had said no, the 3D imaging from Germany said, well, your liver is small, but you have such a vascular system that your vascular system would support Him anyway. So we're going to give you the green. And so I was given the okay. And the day she was talking about, I was at work. And I didn't want to call him out of the blue. So I called Carrie and I said that the nurse is waiting to tell him the date, but she wants us to give the news. So you give him a call since, you know, you started this. And so I'm at work. I'm just waiting. And she calls Mark and she tells him. And you can imagine getting a call out of the blue from someone you don't know. And he did say, well, hey, tell him thanks. And the cutoff's 55 and I appreciate he's going to try. And she said, no, it's for real. And then she called me back at work and she's just a mess. And so I'm around all these big, tough guys at work and I'm just bawling. And it was just a precious moment. And all was good. And
during this time, she called me, I called the city up north and said, well, somebody just called me and asked or told me that I've got a donor. Is it true? And all they'd say is, we can't tell you anything. We can't confirm it or deny it.
Right.
And so I was like, okay, is this a prank or what?
Right.
Because
right.
the city hospital wouldn't tell me anything. And, you know, you're thinking, well, this is a stranger and they're doing it for me. I just can't believe it. That's Satan putting doubt in my in my life.
And our nursing coordinator said, as soon as you get off the phone with him, I'll call him and give the date, but I want you to tell him. Well, our nursing coordinator got hit with an emergency and had to leave. And so I sent her a text and said, okay, we've talked with Mark, all clear, you can call him and give him the date. And she never got the message and she never called him. So he was left with these two morons calling him out of the blue, saying, hey, we want to give you our liver. And then he doesn't get any confirmation from anybody. So you know what he's thinking. And I had no idea he was going through this. I thought she called and all was good. And I'm thinking he's all excited. And he's sitting at home thinking, was that a nut job or what? So, but at this point, I just want to tell you this. And I want you to listen close. Do you think God needed me to help Mark? Absolutely not. Could he have done this in any awesome way he wanted to do it? And I beg you to get this. I always said, this was God's gift to Mark when God led me to do this. And this was in some sense, I hope you catch what I'm saying, my gift to God in saying, yes, and I want to do this and I want to show you that I trust you. But what I didn't understand was they both might have been partially true, but this is the deal. Please listen. It was God's gift to me and to Mark. But God doesn't need us at all. He wants us. And if He can say, join me, and we will say yes, then we get to see by being a part of it how much He loves, how much worth He puts on someone. What a joy it is to finally learn to put someone before yourself when we're not used to doing it. We get to share in watching Him every time we step out and have no idea how this is going to work. And what in the world am I going to do? But I'm going to trust you, but I'm going to do it. And He answers every need. How would He answer those needs if you didn't step? So He tells you, do it, not because He needs you. Get over that. But so He can show Himself worthy by making you walk the path with Him while He just straightens out every path and makes every bridge over the stream and He just answers every need. And you learn Him in a way you would never learn in any other way if you don't say yes. He's not desperate for us. He's desperate for us to learn to walk with Him because He grows you more than anyone you've ever helped when you step up and just say yes. That's the only reason he uses us. And you got to understand, that's why he wants you to say yes. He's not desperate for us. And then I think we finally had a meeting at the Mexican restaurant. That was after Easter. Got to show you the sweetest picture in the world. Those bums. They set this up. Easter morning, I was supposed to go see him, and he was too sick to leave the house. So I said, it's Easter. I've got to meet you on Easter Sunday. So I'm going to come see you after church. He said, well, all right. And they had already planned, he and Carrie, to come and be here for Easter. And he was barely even walking, and they brought him in the back right before the service started. And I immediately knew who it had to be. And it was one of the sweetest times. But I met him at the Mexican restaurant, and he sat down in the chair, and he kind of laid his head over against the wall, and he ate about two bites. And I'm feeling, of course, I ate mine and his too. And it was, no. But I could see just how bad off he was. And that was the first time we got to meet.
So at this point, the doctors had told me that if I didn't get a liver, I had year and a half to live. They just gave me a short time. And you know, that's kind of jarring to a person. But God gave me some comfort there. I knew what the doctor said, but as long as you got Christ, you still have hope. One of the songs that Christ gave me, if you ever listen to David Crowder, there's a song that's All My Hope. And I shouldn't have said that name.
I'm sure he's not going to sue us. He might get some songs out of this. So.
But All My Hope, you know, that's all I had was hope at this point. And who else to have hope in but Christ? And I text that to Doug.
Mm-hmm.
And he is at work. And
kind of became our song.
It's a good one, isn't it? It's a good one, though.
It's an awesome song.
But that's all we have is hope in Christ. You know, all of us, even you, all we have is hope in Him. And if you could be on your way home today, God can call your name. But you have a hope, eternal hope, that you can go home to be with Him. And you know, even though they gave me such a short time to live, I still had hope in Him. And I still had comfort in Him.
And something to think about, we just talked about, he sent me a text that said, anniversary date a year ago today, what were you doing? And so think if we hadn't been obedient, doctor said he had a year and a half before he'd be past the point of no return. Where would Mark be today? And that's in tribute to God. But just, it's so precious. Every time I look at my 2-liter where there was a 6-pack, I think, why even think about that? Who cares? Look what God's done. But this is where he kind of helped me immensely, and this was one of the biggest tests for me that was just awesome and terrible. They called me back after I told him, we're all go. And because the cardiologist looked at my tests, and it came up later, and I hate that it came up later because it broke Mark's heart. But my father had died of something called amyloidosis, and it's where your liver produces proteins that your body cannot break down, and it kills your organs. And the cardiologist had found damage to the left side of my heart that was a very stereotypical thing with amyloidosis. And he saw my family history. And he called me. He said, you need to come in. I need to check you some more. And we need to do a genetics test because we think you may have amyloidosis. So I went up, didn't see anything to mark at this point, stayed another couple of days, got some tests done. And the doc said, your heart, if this is from amyloidosis, you have a decent amount of damage. If amyloidosis caused this, this is how the meeting went from hero to zero. He said, not only are you not going to organ donate, but he said, I give you 3 years, and if you don't get a liver and a heart donated to you, you're probably going to pass. So I was like, huh? So I had to go back home and we sat for about 2 weeks waiting on this genetics test. And this was a big test. I had peace even then. I had peace.
This is the time that God gave us our second song.
Which was?
Even if.
Even if, yeah.
You know, even if everything's going the other way, God is still there.
Yep.
And He's still working a purpose in your life. All you got to do is be open to it. You may say, what does this have to do with us? God can use you in His way if you're just open to it.
Yep. And while I was waiting on this, this is where God, He beat me in the head with a shovel because I got mad at God. I was like, God, we've done all this. Mark doesn't have long. Everything's just great. And now this. And so they had to tell Mark. What they had to tell Mark was, Because of medical reasons, Doug may not be able to continue. We're on hold.
That's the same thing they tell you if the person backs
chickens out. So if I chickened out, they couldn't say, well, Doug turned into a big chicken. They'd have to say, due to medical reasons, he can no longer proceed. So I just know Mark's, he doesn't know me. I just know Mark's thinking, yeah, whatever, medical reasons. So that's breaking my heart. And because he doesn't know me, and I know that's got to be what he's thinking. And I called him and tried to explain it, and he was very understanding, but I knew what had to go through his heart.
But at this time, God was giving me a message saying, this is a okay. Tell Doug it's going to be okay. He's going to
get
us through this.
He ministered to me big time. It's like, and he kept telling me, well, if this isn't God's will, that's, you know, I'm okay with that. And he just broke my heart. But during this time, I didn't really have doubts that God was still going to do this. I had peace. But we had already passed the date that we were going to be able to get the surgery. And if I didn't find out something in the next day or two, they were going to put the surgery off for way down the road, which I didn't know how that was going to affect Mark.
This was on March 31st, by the way.
Yeah.
First surgery date.
Yeah. And so I'm mad at God. And this is so crystal clear, and we need to get this. This is a big point. God, as clearly as I'm speaking to you, I was getting up, I was getting ready for work. He said, do you think that this was your idea and your plan? Do you think you orchestrated this? Do you think I'm sitting here all bamboozled about this big date change? He said, you are in the play and I'm the director and you need to just shut your mouth and trust me. This has nothing to do with you. This is what I'm doing. And it hit me so hard, I cried all the way to work. I said, God, I'm sitting here mad at you because you did something and you allowed me the honor of being a part. And then I get mad at you because it doesn't go my way. I'm so sorry. And all the way to work, I cried in repentance. And I said, because the nurse had already told me if we hadn't heard from them the day before that day that the surgery was off. I said, Lord, it would be just like you. I said, I know this is what you were proving to me. This is what you were trying to make me see. That this isn't me, this is you. I said, I got it. It would be just like you now to do something incredible. And I trust you. And I went to work, and about 9 o'clock that morning, I'm out on the floor, and I received a courtesy call from the lab. Wasn't going to hear from them for another 2 weeks, but a lady thought, well, he must really be worried that he has amyloidosis, so she called me. And she said, this is just a courtesy call. You won't get your paperwork for some time, but I want you to know you don't have amyloidosis. And I'm out on the floor, and I just started hollering, and I sent a text to my nursing coordinator, and I said, I don't know when you can reschedule this. I know we missed the date, but I just got a call, and I don't have amyloidosis. And she sent back an all-caps letter text that just said, give me her number now. And within 10 minutes, she had called all the surgeons and said, we've got a green light. We don't know how long Mark can wait. Can we do this? And they had it set up for 6 days from that date. And it was the biggest time that God spoke to me, just shut your mouth and say yes, and then go for the ride. This isn't you. Don't have predetermined notions of how God will do it, because even when it seems like it's not working, you just trust. And it was the greatest thing in the world to be able to call him and tell him that it was back on. And it was the greatest thing in the world that God just showed me, because I just knew that morning when I went to work, he's going to call and tell me. And this is still going to happen. And I don't know how, but it's going to happen. And it happened. And God spoke so clearly. Found out that the damage to my heart is stress and lack of sleep over an extended period of time. He said, is there anything in your life that could do that? I said, well. So that's where he kind of helped save my life, because the doc told me, he said, you stay in this lifestyle, I give you 3 years and you'll be on medicine to keep your heart going. And I would never have found that out. I just thought, stress, you know, I'm getting old. I'm feeling it. So I found this out while getting tested. But so anyway, at that point, Mark texted me, and I'm going to hand it over to Mark, but I got to give you this. Mark texted or called me 2 or 3 times a day until the surgery to say, God bless you, praying for you. Don't know why you're doing this. Love you so much. Just a precious man. Some people would say, hey, you chose to do that. That's your choice. Thanks. And you'd never hear from him again. This man, every day. And then he called my wife behind my back to say, how do you really feel about this? Because if you're not on board, we're not going to do it. Now, he had a life-saving setup, and he was worried that my wife was not going to be okay with it. and was going to back out. So, good man. So anyway, had the date. We went down there, scheduled for April 16th. May. And we were there a day early at the apartments at Transplant House, and I'll hand it over to him.
Also, when I talked to his wife, I wanted to go down through each of his children and make sure they were okay with it. You know, it was a beautiful thought that she gave me. This is what she said, the children said. If God is telling him to do it, we're behind him 100%. You know, you couldn't get
Except Zach, he said, buy more insurance.
Twice as much. But that is such a, you know, it's such a step he took. I wanted to make sure his children and everybody related to him, it would be no problem for him. Because if it was, what good it would be to take a man with a family and possibly put his life at risk with children. But I knew that God was in control of everything. And when he said that, when she told me that each of them said, do what God said, I knew there was a peace there. And I knew that God was in control of all of it. And, you know, he knew from day one, before I was even born, what would happen. And he gave me the right answers. He told me what was going on. And Doug told you that I text him every day. But the only reason I text him is because God would put a scripture upon my heart and tell me to do it. So he got a different scripture every day. Mm-hmm. And most times he'd say, this is what I need to hear this day. This is what God was sending to me.
Yeah, I was supposed to be helping him, and he's ministering to me that time. It was sweet. It was precious.
His co-workers even got a part of it. They'd be around, and Doug would say, this is what Mark texted me today. Yeah. And they would get something out of it. You know, God can use you when you're in the lowest part of your life. Because if you'd heard the doctors tell you that you got less than a year and a half to live, you'd think, oh, my Lord, what am I going to do? I want to live longer. But God gave me peace. He gave me scripture to back it up. And so I would give it to Doug. And Doug would say, that's exactly what I needed to hear.
Yep. Very oftentimes it was perfect. And I wanted to tell you one more thing before I tell you about the day of surgery. And I know time's catching up with us, but we'll go through the surgery part rather quickly and then give you the points that God gave us out of this. But when we got there the day before, and we were going to stay in the apartments for the night. And so Mark came over, and I got situated in my apartment, and we were going to walk across the street to his apartment. He was going to show me his apartment. So he left a couple of minutes before me. And so he's out on the street, and I come out just 2 minutes behind him, and he's talking with someone. And go ahead.
The Lord told me to stop and talk to this couple sitting on the wall just talking. I could tell that they were really distressed. I could tell that something was just tearing them apart. And so I introduced myself, and I just started talking to them. And I was trying to give them hope. And right in the middle of this, God shut me up. And I'm like, okay, Lord, I'm trying to witness for you. And he said, holler for Doug. Call Doug down here. And I said, hey, Doug, come down here.
And so I was on my way across. And, you know, you got a lot on your mind when you get ready to give your liver the next day. And I've never had surgery like this. And being the righteous, holy pastor that I am, I was like, really, Mark? Really? I mean, you got to be honest. This is what you're thinking in your mind. It's like, what are you doing? So I go over and I'm talking to this lady. And they're not Christians, but they're very nice people. And this lady is just broken. She's bawling. And what Mark had gotten started with, her husband was there because he's needed a liver forever. For 3 years, I think it was, yeah. He'd been on the list. He wasn't there to get a liver. There still wasn't a liver available. He was there to die. Because he had gotten so bad, he was now hospitalized because he couldn't live outside the hospital anymore, and he was almost gone, and there was still no liver available. And then I said, well, too bad, Mark. I'm sorry. I'm going to give to this guy. And no. So, but he was there to die. So, and you know, sometimes God tells you to pray a weird way, and sometimes he doesn't. You just pray. But I felt like God was really clear, and that's probably why Mark had to hand it over. And at this point, when I heard her story, I felt so bad because, you know, nobody knows the twinge of, oh gosh, I don't want to talk to anybody right now. There's times you just don't want to talk. So I sit down beside her, put my arm around her. She just laid over my chest and just melted, just bawling. And felt like God told me to pray a certain way, and that was, God, I pray that you would help her and her husband to. But I pray, Lord, that you would do it in such a way that nobody has any doubt that you moved so that you can prove that you're real to this woman and that you love this woman. And so we talked for a good while and we prayed and we went on across. And 2 days after that prayer, her husband was in surgery getting a liver. And that dirt bag recovered and left before either one of us did.
He had been in the hospital since November 11th. And now it's May the 16th.
Yeah.
And this stress had been on her that long. I mean, they couldn't even take him out of the hospital. And they had no hope because they didn't know Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And Christ was sending us there to give them comfort, to show them that he is in control.
Right.
And I'm sure after her husband went to surgery that they thought a lot about what Christ and what the two men sitting on them next to the wall had thought said.
Yeah. And that's where you don't, when you pray, pray first with the strength. This will give you confidence and boldness. God, it's for your glory. Remember that. Whatever you pray for, pray first that this happens so people see you and know you and feel your love. And that's when God will move. And that was just one of the most precious things that happened up there. And it came to be because of one annoying moment where Mark stops to talk to somebody, and I'm just ready to get to the apartment and talk about this because tomorrow's a big day. And God, nothing Jesus Christ did was, if you read the scriptures, ever anywhere but along the way, right? Every time it was something happened along the way. So be ready and pray for God's glory. So we were going to check in that night to the hospital, and the last thing we did, Brendan and I went over to his apartment because he couldn't walk that he didn't have a lot of strength. And we all had communion. And this was the time we were having before communion that night. And we took pictures off his balcony just to share the moment. And we had communion together literally before we walked out the door. And we said, Lord, we're going to have communion for your glory. And we're going to have communion again on the other side when it's all done to give you glory again. And we had that communion here with this church when it was all over with. We took communion with this church to give God glory that he brought us through it. Boy, if we had known the ride we were going to get then.
At this point, I went from 210 pounds down to 130 pounds. And if you lose weight that fast, you know that it's really hard on the system. And we were going into the hospital that evening for the surgery the next day. We had our family up there. Doug had his family and I had mine. And we was in two different buildings at the hospital. Doug got the VIP suites. I mean, he had a chef. He had a nurse, his own personal nurse and stuff. And I got stuck down on the other floor.
We had chefs, not cooks. Just saying.
You know.
Robin Williams had stayed in the room I stayed in. Just saying.
I had another person in the room with me and no privacy whatsoever.
I did. I actually felt horrible. I'm like, can you just bring Mark up to stay in the room with me?
Yeah,
because I felt bad. Yeah, I felt. So the surgery went really awesome. Jay and Carrie came to see me off since they got me into this mess. And Brenda, she was out of her mind with grief. And she's like, she gave me a kiss goodbye. She looked over at Jay. She said, Jay, are you going to kiss him goodbye? Oh, yeah, she offered for Carrie. Carrie's like, no, that's all right. And Jay's like, sure. So Jay came over and kissed me. And so the nurses are like, mm-hmm. And that was pretty awesome. At least I was laying down. He couldn't pat me on the honey like he does sometimes when he gives me the mic. But so it went really well. The surgery went awesome. This is a picture right before he went in. And there's a little... Mr. Greedy here took 60% of my liver because he was so bad off that he needed more. He was weak. And left 40%, which we both grew back a lot more. And,
you know, something impressed me about the night before the surgery. My sister came up to me and whispered in my ear, are you afraid? You know, I had no fear in me at all. I was relaxed. I was joking with everyone. And, you know, God was there. He had given me peace. Peace that you'll never understand in your life. And I looked at her and I said, I'm not afraid at all. And she started crying. And then they came in and took me out and walked down over to another building and down that long hall. I tell you what, it was a long hall. And I was just talking to the doctors and stuff. When we got down there, there's a whole staff of people all dressed in surgical stuff. And we just started talking. And one of the comments the doctor made later is, he's one of the most peaceful people going into a surgery like this. But I know who is by my side. I could feel him standing there. It wasn't a doctor. It wasn't a nurse. It was Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And they were all there. And they said, even asked me what music I wanted to listen to while I was in surgery.
For the whole 30 seconds before you went out. Right. Yeah, it's all a ploy. It's all a ploy.
But I told them, and they turned on the music. And all of a sudden, they had my arm stretched out. And they taped them to the bed. And I still felt peace. You know, if you do, you're in God's center, God's will, you'll have a desire to have peace, and God will give you that peace.
Well, the night before for me, this big Italian nurse came in, and he gave me this drink to clear everything out of your system. And he told the rest of my family, he's like, I want you to say goodbye to him now, even though it's the night before, because you probably won't see him anymore. He's going to be in the bathroom. And the entire time I was in the hospital, that guy would come by and he'd pick up one of those bottles he'd given me and he'd just shake it and say, you want another? I'd be like, go away! Go away. But so on the way down to surgery, they brought me down in a gurney. And if you've ever laid horizontal in an elevator, it's a wild feeling. I mean, it's like a roller coaster. So I did it, and Zachary was with me in the elevator, and I thought, dude, this is awesome. It is great.
It was so
the
drugs.
I got off the elevator, and they take me on to surgery. And so Zach's on his way back up from surgery to the waiting room, and he decides he wants to know what it feels like, so he lays down in the elevator. And the door opens, and there's a wall of doctors and nurses. And he's laying. So. But anyway, the surgery, you really feel rough when you come out of this. I've had like 8 surgeries, but they've all been on appendages. So this is Mark like the very next day, and he was really, it was rough in the beginning. And this is me on the same day.
And the thing he's not telling you, his liver was such a wimp, they had to take my spleen out also.
You can get it back!
His body.
They did. They had to take his spleen out because it couldn't support the spleen because my liver was tiny. Yeah. But, so the surgery did go very, very well. And Carrie was the first one to come down to see us, and I don't remember seeing Carrie at all to this day. But she said when she walked into ICU, I just pointed my finger and sat up and said, I hate you. But even in all the pain, total peace, most awesome thing in the world. And I'll tell you this. This is a picture I took that day when I got up into my room the day after I got out of ICU. And the most incredible feeling when I finally came to my senses and I was up in my room, I thought, at this moment, there's another human being alive because there's a part of me that's inside of them. And that's why they're alive. And it was just overwhelming. And God spoke as clearly as I'm speaking to you and said, and the only reason that you don't realize, the only reason that you are alive is because there's a part of me in you. Now you're beginning to see the picture. And the time that I spent there on my back, one of the sweetest things that I learned, because I stay so busy with 2 ministries all those years that I'm so busy serving God. God put me on my back, one, just so I could be with Him. And that's why I'm trying so hard. It changed my life. Changed my entire life. I've tried so hard to communicate. All He wants is your love and your time first. But when He had me on my back and you don't have a life anymore, I would see commercials of people eating barbecue and throwing frisbees. And I'm like, I can't do either one of those things. But you start watching other people. And God, every person that would come in the room, God would just speak to me about them, how to pray, what they must be going through, how to talk to them. And I was hearing God like I'd never heard in my life. And He had to put me down to teach me that. The sweetest time I've ever had in my life was the time that I had with God alone and even with other people. When finally, for the first time in 14 years, I wasn't ministering and it wasn't up to what I could do. And God told me this. He said, it's always been me. You've always been this helpless. You just didn't realize it. And you were trying to do too much. But if you'll just let it always be this way when you go back, I can do more. And you got to realize every one of us in his eyes spiritually is in a hospital bed with half a liver missing, and it's up to him. So you just listen to him, and he tells you how to pray and what to do and who needs you and what he... Just understand it's all him. And I had to learn that the hard way.
During this time, God showed me a different picture. You know, God showed me that this was my Savior. He's the one that allowed me to live during this time. But this is my earthly Savior. And he showed me that he is my heavenly Savior. That with him, I can live through eternity. Doug gave me part of his liver, but he gave me his whole life. That I would have salvation. That I could go to heaven and be with him one day. You know, I didn't realize what a Savior was until I had somebody willing to risk his life. The Bible says, no greater love has any man than he laid down his life for another. And you know, God brought that true to me that day. He showed me a way that his Son laid down his life for me, that I may have life eternal.
I'll fast forward it and have one more big thing to cover with you and then be done. And thank you for the extra time. We stayed at a place called the Transplant House. These are pictures of it. I ended up being there for 40 days to the day. And Mark ended up being there for months. Because the doctors told Mark later that between the two of us tag teaming, we were the worst bunch of complications they've ever had in the hospital history. Not a good record to have.
I still get to go see them about every 6 to 8 weeks.
Yeah. And the first night we were in the transplant house, Brenda, first night he was back. I'd been back for a while. They were like, come over and sit with Mark. We're going to drive up to the store for 15 minutes and get his meds. So I can barely walk. I get over there. They get me situated in the couch next to him. I can't get up. He can't get up. We're like two old dead people. And our ladies say, we'll be back in 15 minutes. They got lost. They did smell funny when they came back. No. They got, what was it, 2 hours?
2 to 3 hours.
And we're sitting on the couch staring at each other. You know, we drop something and be like, you going to get it? I ain't getting it. You going to get it? No, I ain't getting it. So, you know, we're sitting there in our own urine by the time they get back. Just, no. And it was hilarious because what was supposed to be 15 minutes, they ended up in the most worst part of downtown. But anyway, so while we were there, just real quick, this is how God works. The Transplant House wanted to do a commercial on primetime television in this big city. And they were like, hey, we want you to tell your story so that it can lead into the transplant advertisement. So I got to be in a set on primetime news in this big city. And it let me just, and I was like, you know, God, if you gave me this chance, I'm just going to go for it. So I just bragged on Jesus and turned it in. Because these people might not ever hear anything like that again. So God literally gave me, I was only up there for that 40 days, and God gave me a chance to tell the whole city on primetime news how awesome Jesus was. How many times does that get set up? It's how God works. But long story short, and we're going to cut to it. I had my liver, one of only two people in all this hospital that ever had a bile leak, and I got poisoned, and they had to do an emergency surgery and run a tube in and drain the bile for weeks. All the antibiotics they gave me, that led to C. diff, so I had to go back in the hospital again. And then I got out, came home, and later on got diaphragmatic hernia, where you get a hole and your intestines push up behind your lungs, and it can be fatal. It's very dangerous. So all these things happened, and God works in everything. You don't doubt. When it doesn't go your way, he's working in everything. But that's nothing, because Mark went through crazy complications, and he can tell you some of the more minor ones, which led to the big one, and that's what we'll end with because God is so awesome. But I want to let Mark tell you I had some serious complications, but when you look at the ones Mark had, it was a lot easier. So,
you know, it's one of the sweetest times when this happened. I mean, an awesome time that God put me through or allowed me to go through. He didn't put me through it. He allowed me to go through it. You know, I mentioned a thing called press, and this is a complication that very few people. As he said, we're the worst patients ever go through there. And the press occurred one day. I was getting ready for church. I was going my first time going to church after my surgery and getting home.
And my first sermon preached since coming back. Well, tried to preach. Yeah. Thanks.
Thank you.
Carry on.
But I was upstairs getting ready to get in the bathtub because I couldn't take a shower. It drove me crazy, but I started loving baths. But
too much information. Sorry, go ahead.
You said, but I was sitting down, and all of a sudden, my right arm just dropped. I tried to lift it with my left arm. It was like lifting a ton. And I called for Brenda, and she was downstairs. So I banged on the wall, yelled for her again, and she heard me. And she started coming up and asking, "What's wrong?" I said, "I can't lift my arm." And then everything started getting kind of dark. And I sat there, and I said, "Call 911." And that's the last I remember. And she called 911. And, you know, we live in a neighborhood that it's well needs to be ministered to. I'll put it that way. And there's a lady that lives two doors down. She called her, and she's terrified of dogs. And we had dogs. She said, "I need you down here now." And she ran down there. And my sister, she called her and came over. But get to the point, they took me to the hospital. We was in the hospital in a city, down in Huntington. And they just set me in there and just kind of left me there. And I was...
They really didn't know what to do with him because they didn't know what was going on.
All I can remember, and all I ever remembered is I'm laying there in the hospital. I couldn't see. I was blind at this time. The only thing I saw...
There's a song for that. I once was blind.
But there was a chaplain with gray hair walked into the room. And all I could see was the gray hair. Weird. And my brothers and them were all sitting next to me. And he got a call from my wife saying, "Mark's in the hospital." I'm not sure what else.
Yeah. That was in the middle of a sermon. Brenda came running in and interrupted the sermon. I think he's still alive if you go listen to that sermon. And she said, "We think Mark's had a stroke. He's blind. He's paralyzed. And they think he's slipping into a coma because he's having seizures." And so we just stopped the service. And I left immediately to go see him. And when I got there, he was blind at that point. And he was slipping in and out of consciousness and wasn't making sense anymore. Right before he went into the coma, he kept having seizures. And when he would have seizures, you know, you do weird things when you're having seizures. So he kept trying to claw his face with his one good hand. So my job was to hold his hand with one hand and his head with the other to keep them separated because he was clawing his face. So I'm right down beside him, and it's like we're cheek to cheek. And I'm trying. I did this for like 2 hours, I think, because I didn't want to leave him. I wanted to. Every time he would have a seizure, he'd roll kind of towards my way, and this is what he would do. And so right here, his tongue's going, little, 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 little. And if it hadn't been such a serious moment, I'd have smacked him. But tell me it happened constantly. So I can laugh now, and I can be like, I see how much you appreciated all I did. But he finally slipped into a coma. Yeah, he slipped into a coma. And we, when they life-flighted him back to the hospital where we had the transplant. And one of the doctors came in crying and said, "When they get to this point, they usually don't make it." And long story short, 3 days later, I went up to see him. And within 3.5-4 days, he was on the roof of the hospital with me. We were looking at ships out over a great lake. And he could see them better than I could. So he had almost fully recovered from the point that they said he's probably not going to make it. And again, if things like that didn't happen, how do you see God's glory? How do you get the chance to say, "Even so, Lord, I surrender to what you want. It's not my plan, not my will, not my way. Whatever you want, I trust you." And then he shows you what he's got.
And one of the things that Doug pointed out to me this time, the major miracles that Christ did in the Bible, I lived through. I was blind, but now I see. I was crippled because my whole right side was paralyzed. I had to learn to walk again. Had to learn to see again. And you know, the seizures were so many of them, they put me on 2 seizure medicines. And all the things that happened during that, my coma, I came out of. And God has brought me through so much and taught me how much He loves me. You know, this took great love from Christ above. It's not just, well, I'll give it back to Him. He had to love me enough to do this. And he loves all of us that much. He loves Doug that much. He even gave him back his liver.
That's right.
And it's just an awesome thing to have a God that loves you that much. You know, the world's got their gods, but how many of their gods can do all that he's done for me?
Yep.
How many worldly gods, you know, out of this whole thing that cost approximately $2 million, God arranged for me to have less than $2,000 to pay. That's a God that loves you. You may say, what does that have to do with what God did? But he loved me enough that he didn't put a burden upon me I couldn't bear. He loved Doug enough that all Doug's expenses were paid, and he got money to supplement his income where he didn't lose that much. He got money to pay for their expenses while he's up there. That's how much God loves us. That's how much God cares for each and every one of us. And all you got to do is trust him in this time. All you got to do is say, Lord, I know this isn't what I deserve because I deserve a lot less. You know, God didn't have to do any of this for us. God didn't have to send you into my life. But now I've got a great family. This whole church I consider my family. And God has given me all this. And I'm sorry I'm taking up so much time, but I can't give God the praise enough that he deserves because he gave me life. Not only once, but he's now given it to me three times during the heart surgery and now this time. It's awesome. He gave Doug a second chance because Doug was going to die with his heart, and he wouldn't know why. But God did it all for a purpose, that we can have life and life eternal.
And the perfect time to have had that pop up. I didn't even know he was going to say it. I was going to say something similar, Joshua 1:9. Have I not commanded you be strong and of good courage? Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. You trust him, even when things get crazy. You just trust. And however it turns out, even if it doesn't turn out the way you wanted, you trust that his plan is better, even when it's crazy and different. You have to trust it was his plan. But when you're in his hands, it's the safest place in the world to be. So, to close on this, I want to give you just 2 points to... talking really fast because we're done. But this is what I learned and I want you to get if you get nothing else before we go home. One, don't show this on the screen because these are real people and we're not allowed to show them to anyone but this congregation. But listen to this. There were many doctors, nurses, anesthesiologists, psychologists, volunteers, cooks, workers at the transplant house. So many people came together, every one of them doing their job, many of them not even getting paid. Every one of them doing what they did for one soul. Every one of them. Do you know how many man hours, how many people, how many money went into saving one soul? Many of them did not know Mark. Many of them that didn't get paid to do it, they were just volunteers, did not know Mark. And if that's not a picture, 1 Corinthians 12:4. Listen to this. Get this for us. Okay, let me ask you this. How much more important, as awesome as a life is, how much more important? Okay, we're going to live another 20, 30, 40 years, 50. Yeah, keep pushing it. And we're gone. How much more important is an eternal soul to Christ? That the blood of God would be shed for him. So how much more, if that many people would pull together that many resources, give that much time, care that much to save one soul, how much more are we as a church supposed to come together to do the same for an eternal life? 1 Corinthians 12:4, there are diversities of gifts. Every person in here, if you've chosen this as your church, you are a part of that system. There's diversities of gifts, but one Spirit. There are differences of ministries, but the same Lord. There are diversities of activities, but it is the same God who works all in all. But the manifestation of the Spirit is given to each one for profit of all. Verse 11, but one and the same Spirit works all these things, distributing to each one individually as he wills. For as the body is one and has many members, but all the members of that one body, being many, are one body, so also is Christ. If any one of these people decided that they didn't want to be involved anymore, what would have happened? And our church is sometimes a completely paraplegic hospital. Because nobody wants to find their place and give what they were called to give. And we were all called to give something completely different. That's how God works, and He meant for it to be that way, so none of us get the glory, but He does, because He orchestrates behind the scenes. And every time you don't do your part, there's something major missing. And if the world has learned it that well, how can we miss it as a church? So you're not just called to be here to get what you can get out of the church. And when you say, I can worship God just fine without the church, you are totally lost. You're part of a body, and you're not just here for you. And if that's the only reason you're here, then you need church worse than the people around you, because you're not getting it. So that's one. And here's the last thing that I really want to say to you. John 13:34, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Jesus Christ, God, gave everything He had sacrificially. He says in that verse, and in many other paraphrases and stories and parables, the entire world is only going to know that you are real and that I am real by the way you love, right? So He says, you have to love like me, you have to love sacrificially. I surely was not looking to do it and wouldn't have had the courage to do it, just said yes. Listen to me. If you don't love in such a way that the world comes to you and says, why are you doing this? You haven't shown Jesus Christ to the world. Anybody can love when it doesn't cost. Anybody can love when they're getting something back. You have been called to love sacrificially like Jesus Christ. And it doesn't matter if you're brave. I wasn't. It doesn't matter if you've got it to give. What matters is that you said yes and that the world could see, not meaning to call them out, the Hills did it. Do you know how many kids need foster or adoptive parents? Do you know that we outnumber the number of kids that need foster or adoption? 10-to-1 ratio, 100-to-1, I don't know what it is, but massively as Christians. Per church. But we don't do anything. God might not call you to give your life. He might not call you to give an organ, right? But God will absolutely 100% guaranteed talk to you sometime in your life, probably multiple times, and tell you to do something that will be sacrificial, that you won't get anything back for. And the only reason He's telling you to do it, no other reason, you're not supposed to get anything out of it, is that you need to show love to the world that they don't understand. And until you give love, the world just can't understand. And believe you me, He used me as one of the examples, because I would be one of the least likely to have done that. It's to show you that He can use any. It's like using Paul, the guy that tried to kill the church, to help the church, right? Use the least likely so that God can show it's all Him. But I promise you, every person in here, you're called. And is it a neighbor kid that doesn't have parents that gives a hoot about them? Is it someone that's broken and knows no one but you that's a Christian that can show them the way, or that can help them through their sin when they're in terrible sin? There's so many ways. Do you know how many people have a financial or material need that you could give even if you don't have it and have to trust God to give it back to them? I'm not talking about the stinking church. I'm talking about your neighbors, your friends, your family. Do you know how many people would love to see you give a time out of your life to them, or invest yourself in them, or love on them, and say, why are you doing this for me? And if you don't do that, then you haven't shown Christ's love to the world. And that's the biggest thing that God showed me. John 15:11, last verse. These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in you and that your joy may be full. This is my commandment. You love one another as I've loved you. Greater love have no one than this, than you lay down one's life for his friends. You are my friends if you do whatever I command you. Command you. Does this sound like a suggestion? No. He commands us to lay down our life for one another. But here's the key. Get it. If you do it, what does he say? These things I have spoken to you, that my joy may remain in. You know who the ultimate person is in this? You get the most out of it. If you learn to put self last, if you learn to sacrifice, the way He blesses, the way He shows Himself, the way He reveals more faith to you, you are the person that gets joy. You are the person that gets blessed. I've been blessed a lot more than Mark has been out of this. And God calls us so He can bless us. So get over your legalistic notion of, I can't do it, don't have it, don't have the time. You jump in and you just do it, and you get the blessings far beyond what you would have if you had held on to that little morsel that you had. So, I conclude everything that I have to say with that, that if you're starting to spend time with God, He's going to call you. He's going to call you. He's going to tell you to move sacrificially. Going to. When He does, the scariest thing in the world is to begin to draw close to God, and He begins to speak, and then when He speaks, you don't move. You will never draw closer to Him until you learn to say yes when He speaks. You'll never know the real Him. You'll never grow in your faith, and you'll never have true joy until you just say yes. And you don't have to be brave, and you don't have to be smart, and you don't have to have a lot of money. I strike out on all three, and God was able to use just because you say yes. And He's not done. Oh, He's not done. So, just say yes. And realize the whole world is looking at us, especially in this time when we are hated so much. The worst thing you can do is stomp your foot and spit back at the world when they're calling us every name in the book. The worst thing you can do. You stand strong, but you show even more sacrificial love so that they have not one word they can say against you, so that they see nothing but Christ. So I'll close with that.
I have one last thing to say. Brenda and I would like to say thank you. You kept us in your prayers. You helped us monetarily. And you loved us mostly. And you know that love can only come through Christ. We want to say thank you for all that you do and all that you have done. We're proud to say that we attend here. We ask that God bless Brother Doug and this church.
And everybody here, I want you to give an organ to get someone else in the church. So, nope.
A lot of kidneys are needed out. That's 67% of the transplants need kidneys. So, yep. We're putting Doug back on the list.
Yeah. He told me, he said, all these drugs might take a toll on my kidneys. So I want you to stay right where you are. So I feel like the Trans Am up on cinder blocks in the backyard. Just wait to take another part. So. All right, I'll close with that. Are there any questions about anything? And this church has been amazing. We stood to lose financially massively, but we knew God called us to do it. And between outside agencies and between this church, we went from losing so much we could possibly have lost everything we owned to just losing a few thousand dollars. And didn't know where that money would come from or even if it would. But this church supported us phenomenally, as did some outside agencies. Didn't know or expect any of it to come in. And that's how God takes care of things. So, all right, we'll close with that. Get this, love sacrificially. Just say yes. If you remember nothing else out of this, remember those two things. All right, let's stand together and... Guys, we're way over time. If you'll close with one song, and we'll be out of here. And I learned long ago not to go this long, and have done well, but it was two preachers talking, so I apologize for the lengthy service. And I thank you for no, it's not the rec. Shh, quiet. All right, let's close in prayer. Heavenly Father, Lord, I'm just glad we got to give this story just to give you praise and glory on how you orchestrated, you set it up, you made the need, you met the need. You touch lives, you're still touching lives, and you have changed me and changed any way you would use me and work through me in the ministry the rest of my life. I pray everybody here would see this is just a parable that every person here is called to love sacrificially, to just say yes, show the world you love. Lord, now that we're learning to draw close, to just want you above everything else in the world, Lord, this is what I ask. Help us not say yes legalistically, not say yes because the Word tells us to. But as we draw closer and just love on you more, let us say yes because we're so passionate to love you and know more of you, and this is one more way to know more of you. Let us say yes in eager anticipation that you're going to do something amazing and I will know you like I've never known you in my life. Let that be why we say yes. No other reason, or else we've missed it all. In thanks and in praise, in Jesus Christ's name.